Welcome back to the Smuggler's Den, episode 14. And yes, this time it really is episode 14. Brought to you by Game Empire Pasadena. We play our league there every week. They have a really amazing store for coming in and playing. They also have an online presence at GameEmpirePasadena.com where you can go for all your gaming needs.
And this is your co-host, Ben Tully. I go by Scarlet Knight on the boards. Make sure you check us out at our Facebook page, facebook.com/thesmugglersden, or check us out and email us any of your thoughts and comments anytime, anywhere, all the time. We never answer, but sometimes we do, smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com.
And that's not true. We answer all the emails. I check it every single day.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
And before we start, I'd like to congratulate my co-host. He is no longer not Dr. Ben Tully. He's actually Dr. Ben Tully. So congratulations there, Doctor.
Well, thank you very much, Doctor.
Doctor.
No, Doctor.
Doctor.
Thank you, Doctor.
Okay, thank you, Doctor.
No, I'm saying thank you, Doctor.
Ah, okay. So, yeah, for anyone who didn't catch that, you can try to figure out what movie that was supposed to be from. But I think we may be... And this is going way out on a limb with zero research.
Super hyperbolic here.
Yes.
Somebody will just be able to do a quick Google search to prove you wrong, but
exactly.
Go for it.
But I think we may be the only nerdy gaming show with two doctors as hosts, which may say something about the mistakes we're making in our lives. I'm not sure.
Continually making day after day.
But we do it for all our loyal listeners that we love oh so much. All right, so on with the show. I had this great idea earlier in the week to talk about the most meta-defining cards of the moment. And then TGO on CardGameDB came up with what are the top five cards in the game. So thanks for wrecking my segment, TGO. But we're going to do it anyway since it's actually kind of different. It's not what are the best cards, it's what are the most meta-shaping, meta-defining cards in the game at this particular moment? You have any ideas on that one, Ben?
Well, I don't want to steal your thunder, Tiny. I know you've been thinking about this one long and hard, and you just told me about this 16 minutes ago, about how we were going to do this as a segment today. So why don't you lead it off with what you think the most meta-defining card is in the game right now, and then I'm sure I'll come up with something while you're working. Let me just get out my pen and start thinking about it right now.
All right, this might surprise people, but I think the single most meta-defining card is Force Choke, and it's really in combination with Vader as well, but even Force Choke on its own. And this surprised me when I came up with it, but I started thinking, this is the card that's the most limiting. I will not play Ewoks simply because they insta-die to Force Choke. I'm very hesitant to play something like a one-drop guy if I don't have a Jedi Guardian out or a Guardian of the Peace. I just won't play a Tauntaun in a Rebel deck, which is critical. It's one of your main resources, but you just can't play it. It instantly dies to Force Choke against a Sith deck. They have four in the deck. They do one damage. If you have Vader out, they do two damage. They just kill Han instantly if you don't have a Jedi Guardian out there. It's just a really strong card that I'm a little bit surprised at how much it has shaped the meta.
I mean, I think it's interesting if you think about the types of decks that you would play if Force Choke wasn't in the meta at all, right? If there wasn't a zero cost out of the hand event that just did one damage that could, you know, pick off something that was already damaged. Like the types of decks that you would be able to make that you can't do right now. And so, you know, those are a couple good, you know, you made a couple examples of you don't play Tauntauns when you're facing a Sith deck and you're using your Rebel deck. But I really think that it's one of those things that just makes it so fragile. Anybody who has one health, any unit that has one health immediately becomes a liability.
Yeah, another card that I really like is the Secret Informant. But it costs three and has one health.
Right.
And so basically Force Choke alone has kept me from playing Hit and Run, which is a really, really strong pod.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's that type of strength that comes with it that makes it such a versatile card and so impactful, because it will just keep you from playing in a whole objective set, right? If the cards that are in there are so vulnerable to it.
Yep. So what about you, Ben? What seems like the most meta-defining card for you?
Yeah, so I think a good example of a meta-defining card, still, and this is, I'm kind of doing this just to keep it in the family, but it's the other really go-to powerful Sith event, and that's Force Lightning. So I've said this before about Force Lightning, you know, for its three cost, you know, take out a focused unit ability, it's just so strong. And every time, you know, I mentioned previously in the last podcast about how I think it should probably be errated to either not target vehicles, just seeing as it seems to be kind of out of the blue in terms of the strength of what Force Lightning actually does, and that the Rebels tend to not have an answer for it, while at least in a Jedi deck you have something like Counter-Strike. And being able to, it's just so cost efficient when you can spend three resources and take out a five costed vehicle. So the Renegade Squadron, Home One, anything that's that big that you're as your opponent can just pay three resources and take out something like that. It just is a monumentally shifting game. And Tiny said before that, you know, he's used to not thinking about Home One staying around for a while. It's like, I want to strike once with Home One, so I better make it count. But I just think that especially when you have the ability to make it only a two cost event, that Force Lightning is just completely huge, like albatross around any type of deck that doesn't have any form of cancel.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's meta shaping in that I feel like one of the reasons I play Jedi over Rebel is Force Lightning. Jedi can handle Force Lightning. They can play Message from Beyond and play Obi-Wan Spirits. You can play two Yodas and get your counter strokes. You can play two Guardians and get your 3POs, and you're probably playing two Yodas and two Guardians anyway, so you have four counters. Jedi can handle Force Lightning okay, but Force Lightning is one of the reasons why I'm hesitant to take Yoda out. Losing counter strokes to counter Force Lightning is a scary idea, especially since they can cycle it with Palpatine. That, to me, is utterly terrifying and just completely wrecks Rebel decks. The fact that you basically get one strike with each of these high cost awesome dudes that you put four attachments on, and then they just go, what's this Force Lightning? Yeah, that should do it. And then they just cry.
And that's if you're lucky you get a strike, because if they win the edge battle and tactics your guy, you don't get a strike at all, and then all of a sudden it's done anyway.
Yes, that's an excellent point. And yeah. Speaking of that, another card that I think is most meta-defining, and I thought this was going to be my number one choice, and that's Palpatine. For me, Palpatine, maybe more than Force Choke, they go hand in hand, is just absolutely meta-defining. It's because of Palpatine that I do not like playing Rebels. I feel like even with the new Protector cards, it's just not enough. We're going to talk about the Untouchables deck briefly later, but I feel like the Untouchables deck is not a good deck because Palpatine can just wreck it. And he can just wreck, like, practically any Rebel deck single-handedly by just dropping three tactics on any guys he wants.
Yeah, I was actually really surprised when we were talking before the start of the podcast and you listed Force Choke as your number one. I was like, well, that's slightly surprising, because I know how much you think Palpatine just destroys everything.
Yeah, he's just amazing. He's one of those guys that you sometimes wonder if he's overpowered. And, you know,
you only sometimes wonder that?
Well, I mean, he is Palpatine. He costs six. So he should be really good. The question is, should he have three tactics? And I feel like with cards like Echo Caverns coming out, it makes him much more reasonable. Now he only has two tactics, and you can do some tricks with Echo Caverns.
If you win the edge battle, you can take away one of his black tactics, and so now he only has one tactics icon, and then give it to one of your own characters. I mean, that always seems to be... But, I mean, that's essentially a card that you can't use for anything else except for, you know, can't counter Palpatine tech, right? I mean, here's a card that should be super versatile. You should be using it on offense when you have a chance. You should be using it on defense when you have a chance. But every turn you're just saving it to try and keep it so that Palpatine only has two tactics icons, not three.
Yep, definitely. There are ways to deal with them. I mean, you can just flood the board with a million guys. And the other way is Rebel Assault. Would you consider that to be one of the more meta-defining cards?
Yes, I mean, it is. It's one of those things where because Rebels are so few and far between sometimes in terms of when you see them either in a competitive setting or even if you're just, you know, playing in our league, in our particular league setup, it's interesting because I never really have run against somebody who's running a good deck that has all four Rebel Assaults in them. You know what I mean? So yeah, I feel like if I was running against somebody who had all four Rebel Assaults and the deck was like already really working at a high efficiency and doing what it was supposed to do, taking on objectives, controlling the board to some degree, and they had four Rebel Assaults on top of it, I would be like, yes, Rebel Assault. I mean, it's just as powerful hands down as Force Lightning. But normally, to be honest, you know, consistently, it's only two copies of Rebel Assault. And as much as it is meta-defining, I feel like, you know, when you don't see it as often, it's only there as a kind of a, in the back of your mind of like, oh yeah, this deck's going to have Rebel Assault. I'm going to lose two cards right now without even having any chance to use them if I do that.
Yeah. I've played against a lot of good decks with four Rebel Assaults online, and it is very warping. Like, the whole game, you're basically just playing around those Rebel Assaults. Like, okay, I can't let the objectives get to three damage or they instantly die. If I'm going to block with Palpatine, I have to have a twist to twist off the heat of battle. I can't even take one damage unless I have a protector out or he just gets Rebel Assaulted, or at least be aware that that's going to happen. And there's just so many more thoughts you have to make concerning them. I don't think those decks are very good. I know that's sacrilegious, and a lot of people love their core Rebel decks. But in truth, I haven't lost very often to one. Even when people say, I won a regional with this deck, it's the best deck. We play against Sith Control, and it gets crushed. But you do have to think very carefully about how you deal with Rebel Assault. And I think that's the difference. I think really good players are playing around Rebel Assault and realize that it is driving the deck, whereas regular players are just sort of running blindly into Rebel Assaults and going, what the? How do you got so many Rebel Assaults over there?
Who is that supposed to be?
I don't know.
Exactly.
Some that dude. Some dude.
That was a very interesting generic some dude you had there, Tiny. Dr. Grimes.
Ooh, I like that.
Just messing around with the run-of-the-mill, having fun playing Star Wars guy, and you're going to go and say that about him right there. Jeez.
Say anything about him, just that they tend to blindly run into Rebel Assaults.
Sometimes that happens.
It makes it much better when people blindly run into it.
Especially when you clearly have two resources open.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, in live games, I particularly like being like, oh man, my hand, like I'll draw my cards and be like, oh, this is terrible. I play like one card, use two resources. Yep. It's like, oh, this is so bad. And then do the Rebel Assault. I mean, that tends to throw a lot of people, especially in those early rounds of the tournament, right? That's when you can, when it's just kind of random, you're not playing against somebody who's won a bunch of games already. They might, you know, especially because the game's so new, that first couple of rounds of a tournament, they tend to be new players. They're not really sure all the rules, and they're like, yes, I got this guy. Look at all those open resources he has there. He can't possibly have anything good.
Yeah, I guess that can happen.
Yeah, that happens. Anyway, so if we're talking about direct damage, so it looked like we covered three meta-defining cards from the dark side, all from the core set. which is, I guess, to be expected, maybe. I don't know. That's to be expected. We're now talking about light side, and it all seems to come around direct damage and removal, and obviously one of the best direct damage cards that the light side has.
Ewoks. And,
I said direct damage.
Oh.
Not yeah. trickeries that really screw over your opponent and are inherently good. I think you know what I'm referring about, and that's Han.
Yeah.
Han. That yellow... I wish we had the explicit tag on our podcast, because there are several choice words I would say after that. Han, wow. That, yeah.
All right. You have to use your imagination there.
Yeah, you're going to have to. There's a couple of four-letter words, and then also a seven-letter word that I wanted to use.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Han's real good. I feel like Han makes a whole bunch of Navy decks not viable.
Yep.
Like, it looked like for a moment there, troopers might be decent with a bunch of new cards, and then you play a trooper deck and they put Han out and they kill your entire board. They kill four dudes in one turn with a trust your feelings.
Right.
And you just look at it and go, oh, that's okay. I saved three back for detained. I'm so slick. And they go, oh, he's got three back for detained. Yeah, good thing I have my counterstroke in hand. Boink.
Right. Yeah, no, it's pretty tough. I mean, I'm trying to think back. I'm pretty sure I've killed every unit the dark side has with Han at some point in a game. And so that includes I've killed Devastators. I've killed the Death Squadron Star Destroyers. Like, these are cards that have had, you know, five health. And Han comes in and goes, oh, yeah, one damage, two targeted strike. I don't think in that situation I used trust your feelings. It was just like the next turn I was like, oh yeah, Han comes in again, one damage, two target strike. Oh, look, the Devastator's done. That's interesting. That was not that difficult.
Yeah, he's really, really strong. The problem I'm having is like building Jedi decks. It's really hard to not put Han in there because right. He's amazing on his own. He has a resource. He comes with Swindled. He comes with the Smuggler. He comes with Crossfire. Like, he's just the best card in the game taken in the context of his pod. It's just impossible not to play him.
It does seem like a really strong pod when you compare it in a comparison, like in a one-to-one comparison of pods. Like, it's just really over the curve in terms of how good that pod is.
Yep. The only one that's comparable to me is Palpatine, and Palpatine's, I think, is slightly better. But for the light side, I feel like Han is way over the curve.
Way over the curve.
So the last cards I would put in this category of meta-defining aren't meta-defining in that they change what your opponent is doing, but they change how you build decks, and these are the protectors. And so the Guardian of Peace all along, ever since, I don't know, maybe the 10th deck I ever made, it was like, oh, wow, these guys keep everyone alive. Yeah, they go in every deck.
Right.
And then now we have the new protectors out of the Smugglers for vehicles, and I have the same thought process. They go in all the decks because you got to be able to keep guys alive.
Yeah, and so that's interesting. So you're talking specifically about the light side protectors. What do you think about the dark side protector, the Emperor's Royal Guard? Shouldn't they be included on the list as a meta-defining protector?
I feel like they're not, but it's mainly because there's only one of in the pod, so you don't have that reliability of drawing them. So, like, with the light side, you're pretty comfortable playing a guy that is vulnerable because you're going to draw one of your guardians, and you can just wait till you draw one. But I feel like that's not the same with the dark side. Like, I'm not comfortable playing Anzadi Elites and just not playing them till I draw a protector because I may never draw a protector.
Right. Yeah, no, that's pretty interesting. And I guess going back a little bit, so thinking about the Renegade Squadron Escort, do you think that they're only viable and strong in conjunction with the Repair Droid, or would you play them even if you didn't have Repair Droid?
I would play them anyway.
Yeah.
Today was a great example. I was playing on the stream, and a guy had Rogue 3 with Wedge and an Astromech Droid on him, but no ways to prevent any damage. And so it's like he swings in, I block in a way that doesn't look like he's going to die, I play heavy fire, and he dies. And it's right. Like, well, okay then. That was a ton of resources, and he basically had the game won. Like, if he had a protector out there, the game was just flat over, but without any way to keep an important unit alive, it just dies.
Yeah, that would be a problem. I did watch that. That seemed like it was fairly brutal on that side.
Yeah, like I'm on the stream going, yep, I lost. I have no chance. I have no outs. And then he just runs into death. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess he's got to run into death.
Right. Overly problematic on that one.
Yep. So do you have any more cards you feel like are meta-defining at the moment? There are probably others. I'm just not coming up with them at the moment.
I mean, at the end of the day, I think all of the rest of the cards, as much as they're good cards, they aren't meta-defining. I mean, I don't think about, when I'm building a dark side deck, I don't think about how does this deck handle against Yoda, right?
Right.
I mean, Yoda's one of those cards. You need a lot of pieces that go along with him. A lot of his icons become edge-dependent, so it's just a matter of winning those edge battles. It's not something I'm like, well, I have to put in these three cards so I have enough edge icons to beat Yoda. But when I do play, I do think about, like, well, this card is going to die immediately to Han Solo.
Right, yeah.
Like, I can't play Boba Fett because he's going to die immediately to Han Solo.
Yeah, or Rebel Assault.
Or Rebel Assault.
Yeah, a card that I was kind of tempted to put on is Wedge. But I feel like I don't build around Wedge. It's just a really good card.
Right, same here. Like, and then that's the same example, right? It's another good card. I'm not saying Wedge is not a good card. It's just that he's not meta-defining. Like, there are plenty of Rebel get decks games where I play, and I don't see Wedge. And I can still win the game. It's not like it's so over the top strong that if I don't see Wedge, I lose.
Right. A couple of cards that I feel like were meta-defining and could become meta-defining. The first one is Jedi Mind Trick. Before we had all the new cards and we were just playing two copies of Obi-Wan, having two Mind Tricks was really meta-defining because you could not rush out that opening turn Palpatine because you always had to fear, oh no, if I put him out and he Mind Tricks me and double focuses me and then plays a dude and puts another focus on him, I locked out all my resources and locked out Palpatine for the whole game.
Right.
And I just feel like we're not seeing much Mind Trick right now.
Not yet. I think it could be possibly coming.
Yeah, and if it does come into the game more heavily, I think it becomes pretty meta-defining in how you're able to play as the dark side. And then I think with Mind Trick comes Mahdi. Like, if Mind Trick becomes really popular, I feel like the value of Admiral Mahdi rises with it because you need then to be able to pull all those extra focus off of your important characters.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other cards that would allow you to do that too. I guess my first immediate knee-jerk reaction was Endor Gambit, and I remembered that it doesn't affect vehicles. So that actually doesn't apply here at all.
Oh, yeah, Jedi Mind Trick doesn't hit vehicles, right?
Right.
And another card that I feel like it's kind of close to being meta-defining is Tear the Ship Apart. Like, if we get to a point where trooper decks become viable to where you're not just using this pod just to get this one card and that's just garbage after that, I feel like that could be pretty meta-defining and that people will be less likely to play things like Message from Beyond, maybe a little less likely to play cards like Wedge.
Echo Caverns.
Yes, Echo Caverns especially, because Echo Caverns, it's really Echo Caverns and the big unit is why I play that pod. The rest of that pod is decent, but it's not like a lot of the smugglers' pods where it's just amazing top to bottom.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried running that pod a couple times, the one that includes Tear the Ship Apart, Take Them Prisoner, and I just, every time I want to see that card, I don't. And every time I don't want to see that card, it's in my hand. Just yeah. been the case a bunch of times. I'm like, oh, Echo Caverns. I'm definitely going to draw Take Them Prisoner Tear the Ship Apart right now. Oh, nope, that's it. Okay, and I lost the game. Thanks, Echo Caverns.
Echo Caverns followed by Han to kill all my units.
Yep, that sounds about right.
Yep, that seems about typical.
Yep.
All right, so that's our take on the most meta-defining cards of the moment. We'll list these on CardGameDB, and feel free to tell us how foolish and wrong we are.
I'm sure there'll be plenty of people telling us that we're foolish.
Yep, and we probably are.
I'm okay with that.
So I wanted to talk about a couple experimental decks I've been trying out. I mean, I still feel like Smuggler's Cavern and the Devastating Sith are just the two best decks, especially Smuggler's Caverns. I don't even feel like anything is close to Smuggler's Caverns right now. How are you feeling about those two decks?
For those decks, I mean, I have to say Smuggler's Caverns. So there was I tried for two regionals not playing Smuggler's Caverns. I just didn't want to give into it. I was like, I'm going to try these Rebel decks. I'm going to make these Rebel decks work. So this was before the Renegade Squadron Escort came out. This is what I'm going to keep trying. And then it just wasn't working. And then Kublai Khan, I sat down and I'm going to play Echo Caverns or Smuggler's Caverns. And it was just like, it just was awesome. Like, it never let me down. I did amazingly well every time I had that. It only lost once. It still took out two objectives that game. Like, I was just blown away by how strong it was. And, like, having not played it for a couple weeks, I was like, well, I don't know why I ever played anything else. As for the Devastating Sith, I mean, it's one of those things where I've been experimenting more with the dark side. And as much as, you know, every time I go back to the Devastating Sith or a version of it, I think, yep, this is pretty good. Pretty good. I'm pretty happy with this. But then I think there are a lot of other small tweaks to Darkseid decks that are also really good. I think the one that you played in the finals at Kublai Khan, piloted by Rings Matt Lay, is actually a really good deck. And that mostly runs Navy objectives.
Yeah, I like that deck. It's been getting kind of a bad rap online. I haven't gotten a chance to play it, but it looked pretty promising.
Right.
And I would agree. I think Darkseid has a lot of room for experimentation because they have a lot of resources. I mean, a lot of pods with resources, and a lot of the pods they have with resources have tons of resources. So you could just play like two or three resource pods and then be able to play whatever you want after that.
Yeah. That it becomes really strong.
But so this comes down to what I wanted to mention. The problem I'm having with Lightseid is that I feel like anytime I experiment, I'm just kind of going, well, I wonder if I can make a bad deck good.
Right. I mean, that's essentially the thought process every time, right? It's like, can I make this deck that seems not good? Is there something I can do that can make it better?
And I think the problem comes down to there aren't that many pods with resources. When they have resources, they just have the one. And so you really, when I build a deck, I look at, like, if I build a Jedi deck, I look at it and I go, okay, Luke has a resource. Yoda has a resource. Han has a resource. Echo Caverns is a resource. So if I want 8 resources and I want consistency, those are the first 4. And if I want those guys to live, I have to use Guardian of the Peace. So, oh, wait, I was going to experiment. How come all of my pods are already chosen before I even thought about experimenting? That, to me, is the problem.
Yeah, no, I find that the case. And I'm trying to think now, even in the Navy, where we say consistently that Navy has the most resources and that's why they're so strong, those resource pods tend to be the better pods and objective sets to begin with. And it's the ones that don't have the resources, and consistently that's the objective sets that don't have resources that look good on paper and seem to offer a lot of versatility. But then once you start playing them and you're drawing them into your hand and you don't have resources, that you're like, I wish I just had some resources right now.
Yes. And that, to me, has really become the problem. And it comes down to whether you're willing to play luck-based, in my opinion. So, like, if you build a Lightseid deck and you say something like, I want it to be Mono Jedi.
Right.
And I'm going to run Yoda, and I'm going to run Luke, and I'm going to run 2 Guardians to keep them alive, and I have 4 resources, and you know what? That's going to be enough. It's absolutely not enough. At that point, you're just running a luck game. Like, okay, can I top deck a resource quickly enough? If I can't, I'm going to be really hamstrung this entire game. You know, I'll be able to play, like, you know, one of the points of Jedi is to be able to play guys and tricks. And if you don't have any resources, you're just playing guys. And then you have these tricks in your hand, and you're like, yes, I have the counter. Oh, yeah, that's right. I had to play every resource to just play something. You know, I have mind trick. Oh, yeah, I can't play that either. And it just becomes this situation where you're just playing the luck game. And I hate playing this game as a luck game.
Yeah, no, it can be really upsetting in that situation. And it's just one of those things, and I feel like you see it again and again. And I think, you know, even like with the new kind of idea that there can be a Jedi deck that revolves around controlling the Force, just falls into that trap. Because some of those pods are just so resource dependent, and you have no way of generating the resources except for like one card at a time. And that's something that I try and steer clear from all the time in terms of picking a card game that I play with. You know, it's one of the reasons I don't like Magic. It's one of the reasons I don't like some of the games that are out there, is that if you just have enough resources to play one card a turn, it doesn't give you the options to play the game. You're just playing, I hope I get the best card for this amount of resources that I have. I didn't, I lose. Let's play another game.
Yeah, I agree. And it's become very frustrating for me because I want to play more diverse light side decks. And every time I do, I'm just so frustrated. And I know this is going to sound really bad or strange, but when I first started playing the game in maybe the first month, I almost stopped playing the game because I hate playing luck games. And I had decided this game is too luck oriented because it comes down to drawing the resources. And it was then when I just sat down and said, no, I'm just not going to play it that way. I'm just going to build in every resource I can into all my decks and go from there and then tweak from there. And that's what led me to the original Smuggler's Den build, was just trying to put in as many resources as I could so I didn't feel like the entire game was luck.
Right. And that was also the basis originally from all the way back for that first Sith control deck. You were putting in Mahdi for the resources, where you're putting in specific pods for the resources that came with those cards, so that way when you got Vader and you got Palpatine, it wasn't just sitting in your hand. You were able to play them pretty quickly.
Exactly. And so it's on the one side, I like that we've gone this route, and it makes the game more fun, gives you more options. But on the other side, by FFG not giving the light side resources, I just feel like we're so locked into a very, very small amount of decks.
It does feel that way sometimes, doesn't it?
It sure does. And with that in mind, I wanted to look at the self-preservation deck. There's a couple builds floating around. There was a build that actually won two regionals. Baziel has his own build, and I played with both of them last week and decided I disliked them both and made my own build, which I think improves on it. So the build that won the regionals was two self-preservations, two Lukes, two Yodas, two Obi-Wans, one Message from Beyond, and one Guardian of Peace, or one Secrets of Yavin 4. So do you see any problems with this deck, Ben?
Well, it only has four resources.
It sure does. It's one of those decks where you're just sitting there going, come on, deck. And the funny thing is, in testing, I got ridiculously lucky. I had first turn, resource. Second turn, resource. And the deck worked real well. Problem is, that's not going to happen all the time.
Well, I think the deck also relies pretty heavily with the number of enhancements it has. One of the best draws for it would be objective choices. If they could get In You Must Go every time as the objective, which, you know, obviously is not possible every time. But if they could, you know, you're playing those resources, you're playing those enhancements for free every time, each turn, then it becomes really strong. If you can play every turn, you know, oh, I don't have a resource, but I get in, oh, look, there's an Obi-Wan's message right here, or Obi-Wan's spirit right here. I'm just going to play that for free. Boop, there it is. Yeah. Now my card doesn't die. Now it's doing what it's supposed to do. But it, you know, that does seem very luck-oriented to me. I consistently not relying on one objective just seems like it could be a problem.
Yeah, and that was the problem with my Untouchables deck that I won Kublai Khan with, is it really relied on getting Yavin 4 out. If I did, I won every single game because I could just play tons of awesome vehicles. If I didn't, I just sat there and went, okay, I guess I play a Protect and a Shield vehicle and do nothing?
Right.
Great. So interesting, in the one testing game I played with it, I got everything. It worked perfect. So, like, first turn, he played a small enough dude where I was able to mind trick him, win the force right from the first turn, get a couple resources, get a couple Godals out, put a lightsaber on it, and just start wrecking stuff turn one. The problem is I played it again, and I got sort of the reverse, right? I got no resources. I saw all four Godals. I never once had the force when I needed it. Because the problem is not just taking the force, it's retaining the force during their turn as well. And if they're smart and they see you have three Godals out, they're just going to say, like, okay, I'm going to commit Palpatine, Vader, and the droid. Good luck taking it from that.
Right.
And it was really ugly.
I mean, it seems to me like it's one of those decks that, and we've talked about this before. So if something like Echo Caverns, Smuggler's Caverns is one of the better builds of the deck, and it wins 75% of the time, right? This might be a good deck in the sense that it wins 55% of the time, but that's a big difference in terms of, like, so yes, maybe it wins a majority of its games, but it doesn't win, you know, a majority of its games. It only just slightly has a majority. And that seems like it would be a problem in the long term playing these types of decks. Yes, you can get lucky three games in a row and win a regional if it's a small regional, or, you know, five games in a row. Sometimes that happens, and that's fine. But when you play 10 games with this deck, you know, did you just lose five games in a row and now you've gotten even on it type thing?
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those decks that's real close. Like, if you gave self-preservation a resource, oh, now we're a lot closer.
Right.
So
do you think it would have been better if they had taken out one of the copies of the Godal Outcast and you had just a Dagobah Training Ground in there?
Maybe. I think this deck is sort of built around the Godal Outcast, though. Like, that's okay. Kind of the point of it. So I would rather they pulled out maybe, I don't know, the Heat of Battle for it. It's hard to say otherwise, because Sorosu Training is really good. Unwavering Resolve certainly works closely with it. I'd say pull out the Heat of Battle, put in a resource, and you have actually a really strong pod.
Yeah,
in fact, it's so strong, I'd probably put it in almost every deck. Which is funny. That's how important the resources are in this game. You're like, no resource? Garbage. Resource? Best pod ever.
Right. Yeah.
So that's kind of frustrating. But so then there was another build. One of the other problems with this build was only having two Guardians. Early game, it became tough. So, like, I played against a Sith deck, and I have a Han in my hand, have not drawn a Guardian, have no real way to know I'm going to draw a Guardian. Like, normally, if I have a Han in hand against Sith with no Guardians, I just wait. There's four in the deck. I'm going to draw one real soon. In this situation, I was like, I guess I have to play Han. And then, of course, Han instantly dies. I never see a Guardian. So Baziel has fixed that problem and switched it to be one Obi-Wan, two Guardians. But it doesn't fix any of the other problems. You still only have four resources. You now only have five big guys, which means when they die, it becomes very troubling. Throwing them into edge battles is less of a possibility because you have so few big guys. So what do you think I did to this deck, Ben, to make it better?
You probably put Han in.
Of course. You can put Han in any deck. It makes it better.
Right.
So, yeah. So I threw Han in, and it's a better deck. But you know what?
What did you take out for the Hans?
I took out the Obi-Wan and the Message. So I have basically Smuggler's Caverns minus Echo Caverns plus Self-Preservation. But it's just not as good. I mean, you're losing Echo Caverns for Godal Outcasts, which are really dicey. Sorosu Training is really good, but It's just not as good as having Echo Caverns.
But you've now removed one of the Force users that was using it.
Yes, exactly.
One of the big Force users.
And I've removed the pod that's actually drawing you cards from playing Force users.
Right.
So it basically completely wrecks the deck to make it better. But it's just... And that's the problem. Like I keep saying, that if you could just have one of these with a resource, if the Guardians had a resource, or Self-Preservation, or Message, any of them had a resource, it would be a viable deck. But I just don't think four is a viable deck.
Four is not a lot of resources.
No. All right, so I've really wanted to try a deck that revolves around Dark Time, and I haven't really had time to try it, and I finally threw one together. And the thought of this deck is that Dark Time with Target of Opportunity seems really strong. And so I made that the focal point. And so in doing so, that left me with two Black Squadron pods, one Reconnaissance Mission pod, two Endor's Gambit to give me five targets. And then I rounded out the deck with two Dark Times, two Devastators, and one Deploy the Fleet.
And when you say Dark Time, you're referring to a Dark Time for a Rebellion objective set.
Yes, yes. To try to capitalize on all this extra damage that you're getting, the units in that pod all get better if objectives are already damaged.
Right. Okay.
So the problem, of course, is it doesn't have Palpatine. Like, the deck might just be flat better with Palpatines. Like, it seems like with Han, you just look at a deck and you go, you know what would fix this deck? Han or Palpatine. Like, that's always a legitimate answer.
Sure.
So we're going to try without him, though. And it's been interesting so far. Like, Endor's Gambit, I feel like, is one of the best pods in the game because you can get that opening turn ATST, draw a card, commit him to the Force, and he plays offense, defense. He's just a really strong card. And I love Reconnaissance Mission. I've been trying to fit this into a deck for a while. Being able to go up to seven cards is just really strong.
Yeah, that was one of the first original builds where draw one with the Sith way back in the day. You were playing the draw pod from the Sith side of things and Reconnaissance Mission, so you always had seven cards in your hand. That made it really impossible to win edge battles.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Yeah, that was super fun. I remember that.
Yeah, that was before tournament rules when you actually never had to knock anything out and you just sit there and be like, yeah, you will never win an edge battle and I will always tactics all your dudes. Good luck with that.
All your dudes everywhere.
That was a little frustrating to play against.
It was a little frustrating to play against.
The Black Squadron is the pod that seems most likely to come out, but I've been kind of liking it. So Vader's TIE Advanced is an interesting card. It has three health capacity, so its three cost isn't that much. It can win the Force for you if you need to. It does some cool stuff. And the TIE Advanced is really cool. At only two cost, you get the potential to do three if it's unopposed, four if you have the Morsh Moraine out, because it gives you the unopposed bonus. And that can be really strong. So if you play... If you have Morsh Moraine out and you Target of Opportunity, which there are five in the deck, TIE Advanced is knocking out objectives by himself.
Yeah.
That's pretty darn good.
It is.
The problem is it has On the Leader, which is one of those cards where you're like, well, even if they play a Rebel deck, unless they play Red 2 or Y-Wing, which is easy to kill anyway, this card doesn't really do that much for you.
I do remember playing one game where I was testing out Rebels. This was probably still, like you said before, this is still like in the early testing. So before tournament rules came out, I remember playing this. And I was playing against, just happened to be an opponent playing this type of deck. And he's like, oh, I'm on the leader. I was like, wait, what? What does that card do? And completely shut down like all of these vehicles that I had or fighters that I had in play. I was like, where did that card even come from? I've never seen anybody ever had a chance to use that card, let alone use it to stop something.
Yeah, I had the same encounter with it at one point as well. And the other problem is Black Squadron Pilot doesn't fit on many of the vehicles. There just aren't that many fighters. So you have potentially four cards that are almost dead cards that have one force icon each. And so that alone makes me think maybe that should be changed. And that's like the first pod I'm thinking about in testing of taking out. But I do like the target. I like the fighters in it. And I love Black Squadron Assault. I mean, if you get that objective out and you get one of those guys out, it's really strong and it's a real pain. Especially since you can do things like heavy fire so that you're striking twice and it has extra icons.
It would be really nice to have more Black Squadron cards, right? I mean, right now it's just the TIE Advance, Vader's TIE Advance, and Backstabber. And so you'll have those, but it's still just like, it's just shy of being synergistic enough for it to make sense to play consistently.
Yeah, I agree. It's not the best. The nice thing is that Vader's TIE has 3 health. So if you get that going, that's easier to loop. But yeah, it certainly could use to be rounded out a little bit more there.
Fingers crossed on that one.
Yeah, but otherwise it's just sort of a deck where trying to do a lot of damage. Like I said, I have a feeling that it's just going to be flat out better with Palpatine, because then you can have Palpatine locking out the board and then doing your attacks. But I wanted to try it with a max target for opportunity build. And so far in the one test game I ran, it was great. However, I did get 2 dark times right off the start. I got the Black Squadron pod. I got out Vader's TIE Fighter. I was able to loop him. It was pretty much a perfect storm. So can't really say too much about the deck after that one game.
So your opponent did have the perfect storm on his side too.
Yeah, he sure did. I thought for sure I was going to win. And then turn 2, he goes wedge. Turn 1, he put out Rogue 3, passed. Turn 2 was wedge and Astromech Droid. And I kind of went, oh, okay, that's fine. I've got 5 cards in hand to his 2. He's not going to win the edge battle. And he did. So that was
it was actually a very epic edge battle for those of us who remember the exact details of it. I kind of laughed when I saw that happen, especially because you thought you had won it.
Yep.
You did not count properly and realized that the Hoth operations gave him the bonus that he needed to win. And you were like, I win. I take out his Rogue 3. And then he was like, why are you attacking me? I get to strike first. And you were like, damn it.
And then I was like, oh, that went from I just won to I just lost.
Yep.
And then luckily, because he has no protects in the deck, he has to run into death at some point.
Did have to run into death sometime, but he really should. He deserved to win that game if he had played it just a little differently.
Yeah, I think he probably should have won that one. So I guess this is what we should say. I played one test game where I got everything to work right and should have lost.
Yep.
So maybe that's a sign this is a bad deck. But
maybe it's a sign it's a bad deck.
Someone out there test it more thoroughly than that and give us some feedback and tell us if it's a bad deck or not.
Yep.
All right. The last major thing I wanted to discuss is resigning games. And this has not been much of a problem that I've seen in Star Wars of people just kind of going, well, that's it. You know, I quit and leaving in the middle of games. But some have started to do that. And this is just a really bad habit to get into. First of all, this game is ridiculously swingy, right? So I've had so many games where I'm like, well, I'm dead. I'm just going to play it out. And then something crazy happens and my opponent makes one tiny error and then suddenly I'm crushing them again.
Right. It is definitely error prone, this game. If you can take advantage of errors that your opponent makes and you're making none yourself, it can really change the game in your favor.
Definitely. And the other thing is with the way the tournament rules are set up, you always have something to play for. So like even when I'm just getting crushed and my opponent gets all the best stuff and I get nothing, I'm thinking like, okay, so now I've lost, but how can I get better at minimizing my loss? So when I go into a tournament and I'm in the top 8, I'm not just dead from this one game. I've actually practiced this exact scenario and I know how to minimize the loss.
Yeah, I mean, it's like one of those things. You might be dead to rights, right? If you're playing a dark side deck, if you are the light side and your opponent is dark side, but you would put yourself in a much better position by winning or by taking out two objectives than just kind of just being like, oh, I lost. I'll just play defensively. This isn't that much, you know, I can't do anything about it. I'll just scoop and we'll just go on to the next game, right? Those two objectives are huge, big deals. And so practicing to get that, be in that situation, know what to do. I mean, I had a situation at KublaCon where I was out of it. This was the one time Echo Caverns did not live up to expectations. I forget exactly why. I forget if my opponent just had a better board or if I had a terrible board or something like that. But he had taken down two objectives. It came to my turn. The dial was at 10, and I was able to take down my second objective. So now we were tying objectives. And he had a lot of damage on a bunch of my objectives that were still in play. He had all these cards. He was ready. I was all focused out except for one card. He was all focused out except for one card. Came to my force phase. He's like, well, you get the force back because you're going to commit this guy to the force. And I said, nope, no, I'm not. You keep the force. And so he went up to 12. He didn't just get to destroy our third objective. And we went into the second game with tie objectives, which is, you know, it's a huge deal. Now it becomes my responsibility as a dark side player to win heavy-handedly like he did and try and take out more objectives in his light side deck.
Exactly. And that's one of the things of really keeping that in mind, that in this game, you can't just start sulking when you're losing. You have to be on your A game and really playing hard. And another situation that I found is that, especially newer players, like they'll make a mistake and then they'll just be like, all right, well, just forget it. Like, had I not made that mistake, this wouldn't have happened. The whole game would be different. The whole game is tainted. We should just stop now. And I know when I started playing Game of Thrones, I had this mindset because I had come over from playing tournament chess, where if you drop a piece, like if you lose your knight or your rook, just resign. You lost. Like, there is no coming back. But in this game, there is coming back, and those terrible positions, like you just made this mistake and it puts you in this terrible position. Well, that can happen naturally. Like, that position will just happen sometimes, and it's better to know how to handle that than just to scoop every time you get in that position.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity that comes along with playing through games.
Yeah, and the last thing for me is that when you are losing, it's when you really learn what are the outs that your deck has. Like, how does this deck come back, and what does it need? Like, that's when you start to think, like, oh, wow, if I just had a Force Lightning in this game, I would have won because I would have killed home one before it struck four times. I would have hit it after the first one, and that's what's losing me this game. And it's things like that that give you that key information. I always say I learn relatively little when I'm just whooping people. It's when I lose games with the deck when I go, okay, this is where it needs a little tweaking. This is where I need to play it better or differently or something. But losing is where you really learn the most. So do not resign your games. Play them out. Try not to sulk and just play as well as you can.
Yeah, that's good advice.
All right, so speaking of that, sometimes I like to have mistakes of the week, and this week I made a doozy of a mistake that lost me a game, and so I thought I would tell you about it. So I was playing Gabe at our shop. I was playing a Rebel deck. I hate playing Rebel decks, but I was practicing with one, trying to tweak it a little bit, and second turn, I did not pay close enough attention to the board. So if you are playing against a Sith deck, Ben, what are you thinking if you're a Rebel deck? Like, what are you always thinking about against a Sith deck?
That they're going to force lightning the crap out of me.
That's one thing. But what's the other thing that you're paying attention to? What's the one card that when they play him, you pretty much lose?
Palpatine.
Exactly. So the way you should be playing a Sith deck is always looking at their resources. And I, for a brief moment, forgot that he had a 1-2-1 resource setup and not all ones. And I attacked with a tactics guy who had two tactics somehow. and instead of tacticsing the resource guy, I double tactics another guy so that my unit wouldn't take damage. It was only going to be one, and he would have survived, but I was like, it'd be better if he took none, and then I'll just come back next turn, and that unit will be stronger. Well, what happened? He top-decked Palpatine and plopped him down. And I just looked at him and went, that is a game-losing error. There's a lot of games that can be traced back to one error, and that's the error. If I lose this game, it's because of that. And sure enough, he never played another resource. Every turn, I could have just kept tacticsing out that resource guy, and he would have probably just ended up playing Palpatine in an edge battle. Instead, he had him out turn three, and he just completely owned the board. And it was very frustrating.
Don't make mistakes, man.
Yeah, really. So it's time for card of the week. Ben, what's your card of the week this week? Is it Leia?
It's not Leia this week. Oh, I know this is a shock and surprise to some people. I didn't even mention her in the episode, so I feel like that's how the only time I should be able to mention her as card of the week is when we do it in the episode.
Oh, okay.
No, the card that I chose for this week, even though I didn't get to play last week because it was a pretty crazy week, was Sorosu Training, which is the zero-cost Jedi enhancement that you can use to target a Force user. The unit gains shielding and plus one damage. It's just a really strong card overall. All of those kind of things that make a card great go into this card right here. It's very cheap at zero cost for that enhancement, which is great.
Seems pretty cheap.
Seems pretty cheap. As cheap as it probably can get. I mean, you can always go to minus one, right? If you have and you must go on the table. That shielding, which has become so strong in the meta that uses Palpatine so strongly, so that you can have those shields to deflect the tactics icons when they're coming. And then just the plus one damage capacity, because having higher damage capacity in a meta where Force Choke is really strong is also really important. So it has a great way of negating some of the strongest cards in the meta on the dark side.
Yeah, my question is, do you think it's gotten to the point where you can play two copies of that and no copies of Guardians? In other words, has Sorosu Training made it so we don't need Guardians anymore?
It's not that close. I mean, I think this just adds a redundancy to that type of deck, right? So if you're playing this and, you know, using that deck that we were talking about earlier, the self-preservation deck, you know, that deck really utilizes its Force users. You know, you maximize the number of Force users, you maximize the number of targets Sorosu gets to be placed on. But, you know, that's a big trade-off for other things. So if you can have a deck that uses this with a high degree of Force users as well as have the Guardians, you'd be in a much, much better shape.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I feel like that card, like you said, is amazing for handling Palpatine, but it's not quite as good for just handling damage. Like, I feel like you need the Guardians as well to offset that.
Yep, Guardians are good. They just are good.
All right, my card of the week this week is going to be Heavy Fire. And this card, I think it'll be a little less strong as people are more used to it. But right now, when you see a unit attacking and you see how much damage they have, like you maybe worry about it for edge battles with heat of battle. And you're like, well, I got a twist. I could probably handle a heat. But Heavy Fire is one of those cards that you kind of forget about, and they just go, oh, your guy's dead now. Especially if it's a guy that can attack twice somehow, like if they have a Talon Roll in hand. Heavy Fire is a very strong card to be able to surprise with that one other unit damage that you need.
It's a very strong card.
And it's zero cost, so that's always helpful.
Always helpful.
All right, we're going to do a combo of the week this week, and this is a pretty basic combo. I think probably most people have figured it out, but I hadn't entirely figured this one out until this week. So this is a situation where if your opponent blocks with Palpatine, and you know he's going to win the edge battle, this especially works if you're using like a Rebel deck. So let's say you have Wedge on Rogue 3, and maybe it's shielded or some other good unit or two good units. you can send in a character also with Echo Caverns. And so then what you do is you steal that tactics and you put it on the character. And now they're left with this terrible decision that if they win the edge battle, which they're going to do, and they go to tactics with Palpatine, if they don't waste one of their two remaining tactics on that chud that you gave the tactics icon to, Palpatine comes out triple focused. And then next turn, he cannot defend. And then you can start using Echo Caverns to try to actually bury Palpatine. And that was something that I was able to use to pretty great effect. What ends up happening usually is some guys die in the battle because they won't just block with Palpatine. They'll block with somebody else. Maybe they'll even kill your Rogue Three. But the plan is to drop another vehicle, and then next turn Palpatine's locked out, and then you can just steamroll.
It is something that I had used pretty regularly before. I've done that a couple times. It definitely makes somebody have to make a very tough decision about what they want out of the battle.
Yeah, it's hard, and a lot of players struggle to plan long term. Like, they see that battle, and they go, oh my goodness, I have to double tactics Wedge, Rogue 3 or someone else. I'm just going to have to let Palpatine get triple tactics. But when you do that long term, it can be a really, really problematic situation.
Because he's just going to get buried.
Exactly. So that is the combo of the week. It's a pretty basic combo, but I think it's one that people have been overlooking. So the last segment of the week is our pod quiz. And I believe I get to quiz you, Ben. Is that right?
There's no way you are quizzing me this week, Tiny. I'm going to quiz you.
Ah, that's unfortunate.
You're a two-time regional winner. This should be easy for you.
Ah, I see. I see. Now you're playing on my ego. That's a good idea.
Thanks. I try my best. Tiny, your pod quiz for today, and I apologize if this is a repeat, but we do not keep accurate records of this, but objective number 27.
20 what?
27.
Ah, 27.
27!
So 26 is Mahdi, 28 is Tarkin.
Sure.
29 is Devastator.
That's what I hear.
I think I know them all but 27.
Oh my god, I know.
Which means 27 must be Kuat reinforcements.
Yeah, there it is. By the process of elimination of what you don't know.
So I don't remember what's in it though. There is a Talon roll in it.
That's true.
I think there is I think it's this one. So it has Death from Above.
Yep.
Has Backstabber.
Yep.
I know it doesn't have a target because I just looked that up. I know it doesn't have a twist. Does it have a heat? I don't think so. It must have like a TIE fighter in it.
It does have a TIE fighter.
So am I missing one card?
One card.
I don't think it has any more events. Some bad vehicle. I'll go with TIE Bomber.
And it's a TIE Bomber for the win!
Boom! All right.
That's much better than I would have been able to do.
Well, that's because I'm the greatest.
Yep. Two-time champion.
The funny thing is I don't know the new pods. Like
really? Damn, I was thinking about using the new pods.
It's the numbers. Like, I know it's in them. Yeah. But if you just said, like, hey, what's number 43? I have no idea which one 43 is.
I was thinking, actually, of using the number 43.
Yeah, I literally don't even know what side it is.
That's funny. I'll remember that for next time.
Yeah, you can really school me on that one, make me look like a fool and a chump.
Anyway, all right. All right. Sign off, buddy.
All right. Well, that'll wrap up another edition of the Smuggler's Den. Make sure to check me out on Twitch TV, Tiny Grimes, for some streaming fun every day at 4 p.m. Pacific and other random times as well. So until next time,
may the force be with you.